Welcome to Bottom Line's Top Dollars,
a podcast about all the money things you suspect might be ruining your life.
I'm Laura Boo, recording from the city of Charlottetown, which is on the island of Abegwik, unceded Mi'kmaq land, otherwise known as Prince Edward Island, Canada.
And I'm Hadassah Damian in Brooklyn, New York, USA, here on Lenape land, the rightful stewards of which is the Nyack and Canarsie people.
Together, we are the Ladies Who Crunch, longtime friends, artists, and researchers who have both somehow made careers for themselves in finance.
Today, we are recording on May Day, day to celebrate labor by non-working. And so we're doing the fun non-working thing of looking at the classic punk concept of life as this like rigged game where most people lose. But we walk that concept back. We're going to examine what games are we talking about? How is it rigged? Can it be won? And should it? So, Laura, I'm curious for you. Think back to yourself as a 20-year-old, you know, punk Laura at 20. So if someone was like, hey, Laura, would you like a 9-to-5 job and a mortgage? What would you have thought and said?
Okay, I wasn't expecting that question, but I was a 20-year-old, like at the end of the 90s, the early aughts, where it was like all of popular culture was railing against that life of being in a cubicle and your life being meaningless. Like that was the idea of the office drudge, a meaningless life, doing what we would now call a bullshit job. And I think that at that time, I wouldn't have taken it. And it's so funny. And now I think, you know, everyone's so into that show, like Marriage or Mortgage. And every time someone picks the marriage over the mortgage, everyone's like, you're so stupid. And I can see myself as a 20-year-old, if someone came to me and was like, would you like to eat out of the garbage or have a mortgage? And I literally was like, I'm just going to eat
garbage
out of the garbage
or
for
mortgage.
The next 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like, that was my
you
job.
Want me to owe money to a bank? You want me to pay a bank month after month after month and have to have a job in order to pay the bank and then listen to a boss? Are you kidding me, man? No, that is a total setup. Yeah, I was just like, do not set me up to be trapped in this like horrific sort of consumerist, soulless way of being. Like I was definitely deep punk in the 90s where like the POV was like, if that's how you're going to set yourself up for life, like you are going to be sad. And that's like the normie straight world to be avoided. Also to me, I was like, this is like the sheeple mindset, man. Like you just think you can be part of the game and win. But I know that there's a lot of losers in this game. I look around and all I see are people not winning this game. So to me, I also was like, no, I know better than participating in this game because it's rigged. All the people who think they're going to make it, you're not all necessarily going to make it. And I'm just not going to do it. Like I'm just not participating in this game. I've got the community. I've got the revolution. Other things are going to happen. I'm going to pick fun. I'm going to pick life. I'm going to pick like
art. For me, it was art.
Art?
Picking art over, like for me, there was this big thing about like art and politics and love and joy and community was like one side. And the other side was oppression and responsibility and a very unfair world. It was very obviously, in my mind, a very rigged game. And I was like, I don't want to play it. It was a very utopian kind of mindset where I was like, I am going to find the magical trap door and go through it and end up somewhere where we will live outside of it.
I'm going to find the door with a circle A spray painted on it. I'm going to walk through that door. There's going to be like a magical commune where we just don't have to participate in this like individualistic picket fence, heteronormative, patriarchal, racist bullshit. Like I'm not doing this, right?
Yeah. And we spend all day just like making art and having sex with each other. That was like, in my
mind. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, this is what's happening instead. Like 100%. I was like, I don't need an apartment. I need 4 girlfriends.
And you did have them. You did.
I did. God bless my 30s. My like punk mindset started because I was like, life in America or in like Western societies is set up on this illusion. It's like the Matrix where there's this like way that you have to be to quote win the game. And all I can see is people who are not trying to win this game, can't win this game, have tried to win and lost. And so let's walk it back a little bit. What game are we talking about? When we had this like punk point of view, what was the game?
It's so funny to ask that question because because, I mean, at that time in my late teens, early 20s, I didn't really understand what the game was. I just had this really deep suspicion that things were not right. And I think that that was also very much of the culture, like the sort of Generation X 90s kind of like resurgence of punk and grunge and Riot Girl was really influential on me. And even like when you said The Matrix, like The Matrix came out when I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. The whole thing of The Matrix being like the world that you think you know is actually just a bullshit facade. And the reality is that everything is fucked.
It's just a chip, man. Just a dream.
I had that feeling. And mm-hmm. I spent most of my time from the age of maybe like 15 or 16 going to workshops and reading zines and books and immersing myself in this culture. I kind of saw it as pulling back the layers and trying to see the world for what it really was. But now, if you were to ask me that question, like, is the game rigged? I feel like after all of the education I've had in finance and accounting and economics, I would point back to like fundamental things. If the game that we're talking about is the fact that in this world, money is required to do anything, if that's the game that we're talking about, then the mechanism underneath is in capitalism. Money comes from either labor or capital. Like you either got to work for that money or your money makes you money. And the rigged part is the fact that, you know, it's been shown, you know, like Thomas Piketty in his giant, epically famous book, shown that historically, statistically, more money comes from capital than labor. And if you're asking me, is it rigged in that way? Yes. In my 20s, I maybe would have just been able to say, you know, there's no war but the class war. And now in my 40s, I'm like, this is what it comes down to. That is the game. And that is how it is rigged.
Totally.
What about you? How did you think about it then versus how you understand it now?
In sort of analyzing it now, I definitely had the sense that like one of the core elements of the game that we're in is it's like, hey, welcome to life. You're born. Go figure out how to get money. Good luck, kids. Oh, and by the way, it's going to be harder for you if you don't have money. Oh, and by the way, you're less likely to have money if you are born in these certain countries or born into these certain types of bodies or into these certain types of families. Good luck. Have a nice life. Hope you don't die. Go get money. You know? And so both the like non-consensuality of it, like you don't pick that, we're just kind of born into this, and the like inane disparity of it. To me at the time, I was like, I have no choice but to be punk and to be like, table flip this system. This is ridiculous. This is stupid. And then in the 90s, right? It was all like, despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage. Like I was also just like, you know, there like feeling the feelings of no control, not enough choices that I think also like fueled me to take the opt-out train. But now, you know, that I'm thinking about it and now that I understand even more about like inequality and oppression and also like the sort of balance between that and choices that we make in life and like where you can move the needle a little bit to like attempt to potentially participate or be in the game. Now I think about like different levels of the game, right? Like if the game is you have to have money, that's like the core operating rule. Good luck, go have fun. There's actually different types of levels that you're trying to get to. Some people never enter various levels. It's like level one is like, are you just trying to like make it and survive? Like, do you feel confident you'll have food next month? Basic. You know, and some people never encounter that basic needs fear level. Some people just start at like the next level where it's like, oh, will I be able to have a good job and a house? And can I retire a millionaire?
Will I be able to do better than my parents?
Will I? Right. And so like whether you encountered level one or not, level two is like make it to $1 million with a paid off mortgage, you know? And then it's like level three of like the game. And I think this is like what gets a lot of media attention and what got a lot of my rancor as a young punk, which is like the people who are playing the like, I need to get my third yacht level of the game, where I was like, well, that's just like a ridiculous amount of money. There are people who are on level one and you're out there on level three. Like that makes me fucking pissed, you know? And I think that's where I was like, you know, rage against the machining out, you know? And it all the levels of the game blur together because nobody actually specifies that you're playing a game. Nobody specifies like the base rules, you know? It's just like, oh no, this is normal. Everyone having to like figure out how to like scrabble up individually towards, against, or in dialogue with this constructed norm of middle-class accomplishments. No, no, that's just what we do. It's not like a construction at all. And I think back to this Matrix thing, I'm like, we make up these goals. We make up society. It could be different.
Well, where you start really makes a difference on how easy or hard it is for you to end up either at the end of it in the same place, which a lot of people think of as losing, or better. Winning is to end in a better, richer place than where you started, and not just at least maintaining. Like, no one thinks of maintaining as winning. Everyone thinks growing your wealth is the only way to win.
I was gonna say, we just have such whack stories about, again, like, because we never pause to be like, what game is being played? What constitutes winning? It's just all these underlying narratives of like, I have to have more money than my family, or I have to like have XYZ.
You ever hear people talk about backsliding?
Right, right.
You are not as well off as your parents, and that is a huge personal failing. And I think that some people criticize it as like, this is a systemic problem with the way that the economy is working, that people who grew up middle class are now no longer middle class. They're sliding downwards in like droves.
Gasp, having to work manually. Right. But the problem, of course, is that's precarious. So, yes.
Yeah. So to define this a little bit tighter, you know, we really are talking, when we keep saying, is the game rigged? We're really saying, like, is capitalism rigged?
Laura, is capitalism rigged? Right.
Yeah. Is like surviving economically in the world that we live in right now rigged? I think that fundamentally, if we take that very economics view of like labor versus capital and build in that everyone starts at different points in the race, the answer is yes. But then there's even more yeses that are much more specific to the context we're in right now in late stage capitalism, in specifically either the United States or Canada. And this is the fact that so much of the neoliberal agenda in the last, I'm going to say 40 years, like the duration of my lifetime, has been about pushing a certain agenda of disadvantaging labor even more and pushing the power of capital. Like, I think of like iconic moments like Reagan busting the air traffic controllers union, and this being like a moment where suddenly the power of unions started to erode at like a very rapid pace. I think about pushes to roll back as much financial regulation as possible in both our countries. I think about the ways in which policies around housing and mortgages and real estate, I think about employment laws. I think about laws around investing and banking, because this is not a research episode where we talk about each of those specific mechanisms, because that, to be honest, is like a 100-part series. But the point is that the way that we've built the system in Canada and the US right now under neoliberalist late stage capitalism is extra, extra rigged to favor capital.
And part of what that is too, is like, as we listed off these things, right, like social inequality, housing, employment experiences, investing, laws around market making and banks, what we see is just like increasing pushes towards individualism and individualized solutions. And so what we end up with is this like really, I think, stressful scenario where like anyone could win the game, but not everyone will win the game. And that is what's scary. Again, for me, like punk mindset, POV, growing up like I did, working class mom, like we had very little money, but like living in housing projects, like eventually I like am in community college. Like I'm just looking at people who I'm like, I'm not surrounded by like game winners over here. Like I was around like awesome people who were like smart and figuring out how to have fun. But it was not a scenario in which it was like, ah, we're all going to clearly be like millionaires and have everything we need. Clearly that was not going to happen. And I struggle with this because I never want to, in my podcast, in my personal thinking, in my work with people, in my life, I never want us to be in a deterministic situation where we have no choices and where it's just like, well, you might as well give up, because that's also super unhealthy and inaccurate, because anybody could win the game, just not everybody will. Look at the data. I always just kind of want to bring this back, because it's like, we don't give this framing to make you give up, but to also authenticate and validate. If you've ever looked around and you're like, this looks pretty unfair, you're looking at facts. You are simply looking at facts with the rest of us. As punks, like we came up with these like real key frameworks for like, okay, you're looking around, you're looking at a rigged system. You're like, okay, here's all the ways these things don't work. What am I going to do? Is it just like, you know, fuck the state, the revolution is my retirement plan? Is it like community, we're going to like figure this out together? Is it, am I trying to engage? Can I even engage? Do I know how to engage? What are the rules of engagement. And I think finally, if I'm going to engage and attempt to play this game, can I engage in a way that doesn't betray everything that I care about, right? And so there's all these like levels of approaches that I think all belay different completely reasonable anxieties that you could bring to it. You know, like on the one hand, the revolution is my retirement plan. Well, then the revolution needs to work. You know, on the other hand, I'm trying to engage, but I actually don't know how. On another hand, okay, I'm figuring out how to engage, but I want to do it in a way that doesn't suck my soul dry of the last scrap of like personal belief and hope that I have. Even the fact that I have to frame it in these ways should be enough to kind of think about how the game, even if it's not impossible to win, is, it's just so deeply unfair that we have to ask these questions. Do I know how to play? Can there be a revolution to help me? Or can I at least at minimum keep my like personal sense of morals somewhat, right? It's just another way in which like, in which it's rigged that we have to go into these like mental gymnastics and sets of questions functionally and morally to engage with it.
This episode is really interesting and challenging for me because it really gets to the core of, I think, what this podcast is about in many ways, which is both you and I come from a context where we spend a lot of our lives being incredibly critical of capitalism, colonialism, patriarchy, heteronormativity, white supremacy, which is inherent in having spent most of our youth in a counterculture community. And then at a certain point in our lives, started to focus on building careers in finance, which meant getting a set of expertise that led us to understand how capitalism works and started to try to, quote unquote, engage in the rigged game much more than we ever had before in our lives. And I feel that around me, amongst the people I know who are around my age, you know, so people who are entering their 30s, entering their 40s, entering their 50s, that's kind of my friend group range, are at different stages of looking at their current situation. As the world gets harder to survive in because inequality is getting worse, you know, neoliberalism is pushing capitalism to the brink. We're at a stage where it is so much harder to be broke now than it was when I was 20. When I was 20, I could be broke and make it work. But now, as so many of the people around me, and myself included, get older, start to deal with sickness and disability, start to deal with all kinds of things, you know, and have to deal with how the world is actually legitimately getting harder to live in, especially as climate change is making a lot of things scarier and harder. We are asking questions about our own survival. And for me, a lot of this podcast is kind of this interesting thing where I'm like, yeah, you know what? I went back to school and I became a CPA, and now I have a kick-ass job and I make a kick-ass living, and I no longer live an extremely precarious life. So I did engage with a rigged game. Have I won the rigged game? I don't think so. I mean, I'm still a worker. I don't actually make any money off of capital. I'm not at the point where I have investments that are making me money. I switched up the game so that I was making better money as a worker. But because of my politics and my values, I spend a lot of time thinking about how I'm engaging with the game now. I think about all the time that I spend trying to, you know, quote unquote, play the game enough to better my personal situation. Sometimes I worry that that's time that I'm taking away from trying to deconstruct the game or engage in activism or whatever. But that question of, okay, I understand that the game is rigged. I understand the game sucks. It sucks in all these ways. I spend a lot of time finding out new and insane ways that the game is fucking rigged every day.
I know. So you like, as you travel the Monopoly board, there's always more. Yeah.
Exactly. You learn, like, I have post-it notes all over one wall of my office that is just all these topic ideas for this podcast. And each individual one is kind of another way in which I'm like, oh, we really need to talk about this way that the game is rigged. But this podcast kind of walks that line between saying, okay, these are the ways that the game is rigged and messed. Do I engage and try and win anyway? Or do I stop playing? Or do I try to blow the whole thing up. Like, that's this whole podcast.
But that's, no, you're exactly it. That's the tension. You know, for you all who are listening and you're like, is the game rigged? And what do I do about it? Those are two separate questions. Is the game rigged? Yes. What do I do about it? Try to win it, opt out of it, destroy it, or some combination of the three. And yeah, Laura, for both of us, like, I think we've both gone from opt out and destroy to try to win and still a little bit of destroy sometimes. And what I hear you saying, you know, where you're just talking, it's like, it's this anxiety, and it's really, really fair. I feel it too, where it's like, is participating necessarily keeping the system going, right? It's sort of like a reformist versus an abolitionist stance, right? This thing where it's like, okay, well, if I participate at all, am I strengthening the system? And therefore, is the only way to not strengthen the system to non-participate, right? And so again, I think it's like this very like either or thinking that we'll talk about that more in another podcast, right? But I too, at some point was like, I have to participate. Non-participating is not working for me. And I know, like, for myself, I kind of got to this point in my mid-30s, and it was just like, I don't know why it took me so long, but I just literally didn't understand that some people had safety nets and what a safety net meant, because I had no safety net. I'd been operating without a safety net. My point of view was safety net free, you know? And so it really took me a while to understand that, like, there were people around me who were close to me and just general folks around me that were making choices because they had, like, nice families who could help them. If you have a nice family who can help you, thank fucking God, because on the other side, it's actually very hard, you know? So no shade to that. But for me, I just didn't understand that that was part of people's decision making. And at some point I was like, oh, light bulb, Damien, you're precarious and a lot of these people around you are not. So you're going to have to make some choices that are different than the people around you if you would like to not be precarious. I was like, well, I guess I got to move from this like duck out moment I've been in to like a try to play. And that was in so many ways like my motivation to like start learning about money and learning how it works. And it like led me to building up like Ride Free Fearless Money, my blog. And it led me to doing workshops and talking to people about money because I do ultimately have this POV, this point of view. I'm like, this isn't fair, but it's also what we have. It's the matrix. It's the game you can't really pick in or out of. I don't love that like my only options are duck out, be precarious, and like be afraid all the time, or try to win and constantly be grinding in this sort of like ethical anxiety question. Because even if you try to win and you're like part of a worker co-op or whatever, like you're still making money, you're still participating. It's better. And we can we'll talk at the end of this about some of the options that we have. But like at a fundamental level, there's no opting out. And I think that is what feels so challenging to me. And Laura, to your point, it's harder and harder to opt out, especially in our like deeply big data, like surveillance culture, digital borders world that we're in. It's really hard to live without money and therefore to like 100% opt out. So therefore you're like, all right, this game is fucking stupid. What are the choices that I have? Acknowledging that I'm like always going to be on this like moral edge because I have to do something or die.
It's so interesting. As you're talking, I'm like thinking about this dichotomy that we set up, which is either you sell out and engage and try to win, or you drop out. Our subculture was a dropout culture. You had to do everything as possible to be as purely disengaged and in opposition to all of the systems that were viewed as, you know, part of the reason why the world is fucked. Now, I don't think that choosing one of those two options is the solution for me. It was not viable. You know, after 10 years of living that life, I was in a state where I wasn't meeting basic needs. You know, I always had a job. I just had a job that I could tell myself was somehow, you know, ethically, morally pure at a nonprofit and made nothing and didn't meet my basic needs. Kind of let the nonprofits get away with that. Now I engage in a way where I advocate for myself and I only take jobs where I'm making enough to live. And I'm doing a job that really engages in capitalism. In a, you know, I work for a for-profit business. Does that mean that I have completely bought in and I'm trying to quote unquote win the game and that I have completely sold out and abandoned all of my ethics and politics regarding, you know, capitalism, sustainability, you know, all this? No.
I mean, according to some of our friends, sure.
But oh, definitely. There's some people that I know where if they listen to this podcast, they would probably never speak to me again. And you know what? That's fair. You do you. I'm okay with that.
But you know what, though? It's not okay. No, it's 100% not okay to have a belief system where when people are not meeting their basic needs, like you're just like, I was working in a nonprofit, not able to meet my basic needs. That's okay. But now when you're able to meet your basic needs and not precarious, it's not okay. So I think we should be fundamentally critical of like any worldview that causes marginalized people to further self-marginalize and to make it impossible for us to have the things that we need. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, it's not okay that Laura can eat healthy food now, I'd like to challenge you on that and to ask yourself why that doesn't feel all right. Because I want us, and I think this is where it gets really hard and sticky, to separate people meeting their needs and figuring out how to have enough, which is fundamentally what we want for everybody, and the particular choices of the situation that we're in, which are fundamentally flawed. I just had to say that. I was like, wait a minute, no.
Yeah, but I guess my point is that I'm just not going to waste my time arguing.
Yeah, think what you want. It's true. Go ahead. Enjoy.
I mean, I appreciate you standing up for me.
I'm standing up for me too.
I know you are. And like, I 100% actually agree with you, but I'm also just like, a long time ago when I came out as queer, I knew that my job was not to convince others that I had a right to exist. Mm. And this is kind of similar. I mean,
what this was making me think about, Laura, is like some of the conversations we've had where we're like, what did we have to unlearn to go from like our sort of like punk 20s and 30s to employed individuals, upstanding professionals who can like pass credential, you know, like background checks to get our jobs. And I do think I had to do some unlearning or untangling of this thing where it's like, oh, if you're in a situation where you can't meet your basic needs, that's somehow better than if you're in a situation where you can, because you've played the game a little bit, because that means you've sold out somehow. And that's always, selling out is always worse than not being able to meet your basic needs. Participating, it doesn't feel great, but like now that I understand more about how money works, and I do think, Laura, like I'm like, whatever, I'm like one step ahead just because I've been like engaging and playing the game for like a couple more years, that I'm like, I'm not like, yay, I love the stock market, woo, you know, but I'm like, oh, this is functionally how I'm going to build wealth and like avoid poverty in the years when I am able to stop working. Okay, great. Very good. That's what I have to do. I'm not like, yay, I love building capital, but I am like, all right, well, these are the rules of engagement. And fundamentally, as like a woman from a working class background and a queer person, and also an able-bodied white person who can like get out there and make some fucking money when other people are much more blocked than I am, I'm like, actually, part of my work is to like get out there, get some money, get some capital rolled together so that there's some fucking resources around here. Yeah. In some ways, I'm like, oh, these are the rules of the game. Okie doker. Let's do it as efficiently as possible. The working thing is interesting. I want to go back to that because it's, to me, that's where the question mark is.
Yeah, I want to stick my finger in it.
Yeah.
Sticking my finger right into the middle of this, there's a place here. As you're talking about, okay, I'm going out and I'm getting some resources. I'm going out there and I'm making some money. The way that you keep talking about it is so that I'm not poor, so that I'm not broke. When I'm retired, I'm not homeless, so that this, that, and whatever. And I feel like I have been making quote unquote good money now for, I'm going to say maybe 4 years, 5 years. That's how long I've been making decent money.
Okay. You and I both. Yeah.
That's not actually very long. And for it's making not, decent.
No, it's not. That's not.
I guess just in comparison to where I was, I sometimes feel very rich now because it's so different than how I have spent most of my life. This thing of engaging, quote unquote, engaging with the game. I'm out there making a decent paycheck right now. To me, there's a difference. Like my goal is not, I'm not out there being like, I'm the next Elon Musk. I'm the next
You're not?
Fucking Bill Gates or whoever. You know what I mean? Like I'm not out right. there.
I want to be the next Dolly Parton, but that's
okay. Yeah. But that's like, different. Let's, Yeah, that's really
all different. Hail. All hail. Saint Dolly. All right.
I'm sitting here and saying, you know, the piece of my politics that changes it for me is that my idea of winning is so different. Like, part of the problem is that if the game is we are literally Monopoly trying to get rich, even playing that game is wrong. Mm-hmm. Because playing that game is what's leading us towards the climate apocalypse.
Yeah, environmental extractive destruction. Yeah.
Exactly. It is the game, the idea of being wealthy, of having so much more than what you need to be okay, so much more, like luxury items, astronomically more than what you need, in my opinion, is fundamentally immoral and unethical because it's unbalanced. It destroys people and it destroys the world. And so me going out there and just like, you know, doing my double entry bookkeeping and auditing as an accountant for a decent goddamn paycheck, I'm not doing it so that I can wear blood diamonds and have a gold toilet. Like, I'm doing it so that I can have stable housing and decent food and healthcare and dental and whatever. And that's the kind of culture jamming, to use a total like 90s
kind of concept. Okay, 90s. Yeah. Crime think. What's up?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God. Is to me, it's not saying I'm going to completely drop out and never have a job and whatever. And that's the punk way of opposing and winning. For me, it's saying, you know what? I should have, you know, safe, decent work that I like and that makes me happy, that pays me a good salary, that allows me to cover my basic living. And basic living is more than just not fucking dying or freezing to death or starving to death. Like basic real living.
Like, you know, living wage. Living wage.
Yeah, in like a harmonious, not taking too much like resources out of the world to keep myself afloat, doing that is okay. Part of the, you know, culture jamming of the game is to say, we need to stop thinking that a 5,000 square foot home and 3 cars and diamond rings and swimming pools and airplanes and designer clothes and a new cell phone every year is what we need to be aiming for.
Right. It's a really good point that you're making, because it's right in the middle of like jam the culture jam, right? Where it's like we need to normalize people having enough and having living wages, and like it's okay to have like an organic tea that you can buy from like a whatever woman-owned cooperative, you know, in another country. Like, yes, you actually probably need disposable income to get that. But like, yeah, you probably don't need like multiple yachts, you know, unless you have a yacht-related business or something, you know, like normalize having enough, but also like continue to disrupt like consumerism, because it's just destroying our planet and horrific.
And disrupt housing. We all should have decent housing. Mm-hmm. And right now, the only way to have decent housing is to own your own individual house or find a unicorn of a landlord who, like, where you can actually afford to rent a decent place to live. These two options, they suck. They really suck.
These options suck.
And there are ways to try to break that down, to say, you know, we can work towards housing cooperatives. We can work towards land trusts. The same. And, you know, work does suck most of the time. There's ways to try and make that better through things like workers' cooperatives. It's such an unbalanced, messed up, rigged system. The idea that the only two ways to exist within it is either engage and, you know, meat grinder your way to a diamond ring, or completely drop out and just
meat grinder till you die.
Yeah, like it doesn't make sense.
Western thought is so deeply dualistic in our thinking. Like we're like, well, you either have one or you have the other. I think we struggle with nuance, honestly. And in particular, imagining and then living into the ways that are going to be different. Like we have to get our like futuristic sci-fi thinking going and be like, how am I going to act in the new non-extractive regenerative economy way, right? How am I going to work in the like work doesn't suck and I do things that are interesting and like create a like healthy and like holistic exchange economy? That those are all the next steps, right? We're kind of still in this kind of like first stage. And I think, again, like this game is stupid. Like, can I win? How do I stop playing? Like, this is what we're talking about. I know when I reflect on like what I'm doing right now, like I feel like I'm the part of the game that I'm playing is deep game, because I'm like, how much money can can people make? Like, what types of jobs make a lot of money? Like, I just got really strategic about like what skills get paid well and what fields get paid well, which is how I ended up, you know, combining my like fascination with how money and economics works into a finance job. Like, you know, again, like unlike you, I didn't start out being like, oh, work in finance. I'm much more like, how do things work and where do they break and where don't they work for people? And how do people get stuck making the decisions they're trying to make? In a way, I feel like I'm both Robin Hooding, but also like making up for lost time in terms of like, you know, I make like a very good salary, but I'm also like, if I was to average it over the course of my life or even over my like post-grad school life, you know, I'm making a living wage. Like, it's good, you know, to the point of what you were just saying about housing and to another episode that we have, I'm just attempting to throw money into a down payment fund. I'm like, if I see what my like options are, I want a house of my own. And the way housing is going in the US right now, I'm just like, oh, I need as much money as I can humanly throw into a pot in order to achieve that for myself. Therefore, I'm going to strategically play the game to do something that I'm good at, somewhere that pays very well, in order so that I can like make this thing happen, which is like such a high level of bonkers strategizing that nobody should have to be doing, by the way, to like feel that one can actually secure housing.
Yeah, like that winning the game, the bar is really low there, bud. Like,
I know. It's doing so much to cross such a low bar. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, I gotta make as much money as possible just so I can have housing. And that's me winning the game. And I'm like, sad. Okay, this is, is really.
This game is bonkers. Yeah.
Like going back to what you said at the beginning here, and this is kind of where, for me, this is like the ending moral of the story, is that the idea of playing the game and winning the game. I think in capitalism, this fundamental thing where we love competition and we love winners, we spend so much of our time thinking about the world and thinking about ourselves in terms of winners and losers. Being part of punk was looking around and realizing that there were more losers than winners and flipping the script to basically say, you know what, I'm going to idolize the losers. I'm going to be a beautiful loser. You know, that dropping out was being like, I am no longer even going to try to be a winner, because being a winner was at the cost of others, at the cost of the planet. Doing so was propping up all these terrible systems. And I'm still aiming for being this beautiful loser. And to me, meeting basic needs is something that nobody should be ashamed to engage in. But if your engagement with the game involves you pushing someone else in front of a moving bus in order to get something that you don't need, you just want, you know, that's the part that I'm opposing. And so when people ask me, like I went and spoke at a friend's class the other day, and they asked me questions like, how do you reconcile being an anti-capitalist, being a radical, being an abolitionist with being an accountant who works in capitalism and has a good job? And I'm like... I actually am starting to think that there's not that much reconciling to do, because I am meeting my basic needs. And if I don't meet my basic needs, I can't even participate in trying to change the world if my basic needs are not being met. But the slidey part of this, the slippery slope of this, is where do you draw the line of what it is that you need? Where do you draw the line between I am making a fair amount, I am consuming a fair amount, what I have for myself and my family is a fair amount of the pie for me and mine, versus I am taking too much, I know it is at the cost of others.
Ooh, that is like such an un-American question, my friend. We do not ask that over here, but we should. It's a good question. Yeah.
That is the question for me. So it's like, I'm no longer playing the game of asking myself, I either engage and play to win or I drop out. My new question that I have to ask myself, and I think I have to like reality check myself all the time, is at what point is it no longer, I need this, or this is a sustainable, reasonable, fair amount for me, versus this is extractive.
I mean, it's not about winning the game. It's about like finding that nuance between this either or thinking, right? And like, honestly, like resisting the overall game mindset like, I do totally get sucked into the game mindset in the sense that I'm like, how can I hack this? Like, how can I extract from the extractors? I think it also in some ways goes back to this idea of like resisting the game mindset in the sense that like not quote buying into the like thinking that like, oh, well, if you're working, then yeah, it means you should be like getting all this consumer stuff and like spending money. And like back to your question, Laura, about like, am I engaging with stuff and money in a way that like feels in alignment and feels good? Like I have my needs met. I have things that are nice that I feel good about, but I'm not at like yacht number three level, you know? And I'm like creating stability for myself in the meantime. I mean, to me, that's the big one. Just like having that light bulb about how precarious that I was and creating stability has been the thing that has helped me feel like I don't have to be in that like grind of the game. You know, like I do like wake up every morning and I'm like, thank you, goddess. Thank you, personal, like perseverance. Like there is no job that I'm doing that like I couldn't quit if I felt like they were disrespecting me or that it like wasn't right, you know, anymore. I would have to get another job. but it's like I'm not in that paycheck to paycheck like life anymore. Thank you, goddess. Because that precarity like, well, just grinds your soul. To me, it really is about this like middle ground and this imagination of like the game makes us think it's either total poverty grind or you have to be in the matrix. But actually, we need to build the new thing where we like are, you know, working an amount of work that is healthy and okay. And that probably isn't a 9-to-5 because 9-to-5 is built to extract labor value from people. Back to Mayday, you know, it's like, it's not actually a necessary amount of work by any stretch of the imagination. When I feel like I'm actually quote winning the game is when I'm going to be balanced working. And I really think like, I would love to be like a game loser in the sense that I can stop, you know, feeling that I have to do the work part of the game. That's when I'm going to feel like I have won, when work becomes more of a choice, you know. For people who are interested in even that mindset, there's a whole world called like financial independence, retire early, which is just basically back to this idea that you're talking about at the beginning, Laura, where it's like, if you have enough capital, it will make money because capital makes more money than labor. And once you get enough capital, you can stop working. And like most people in our generations think about that in terms of like, I save up money for retirement and then I've saved enough and I've paid off my house. And I do that in my 60s. But like there's a whole group of people who have tried to do that way earlier in life. That's out there too. Like my personal like timeline for this game is like 50, maybe 55. Like that's where like all of my like timelines are in terms of like saving money and like what I'm thinking I'm trying to do and when. I don't want to have to grind into my 60s. I want to be choosing what I'm doing. Hopefully I never feel like I'm grinding, although these days I do. Hashtag pandemic work life. But that's where the win is going to be, like for me, a transition around labor. And like on May Day, my reflections, I always want to be like, you know, power to all the workers. But actually, how about like power to the non-working that we don't all have to be doing? That's where I want us to be going. Like it's a whole other podcast topic.
But it's so connected to this. If we bring it back and say the fundamental game before, you know, all this shit turned up the volume, it really comes down to labor versus capital. What is the value of labor, as in how much income can you generate from labor, versus what is the power of capital, as in what income can you generate from capital? And right now, you know, May Day 2021, right now, capital is extremely, extremely advantaged. And even that financial independence, retire early, like fundamentally recognizes that.
Oh, yeah. It's just like stack capital. Yep.
It's saying stack capital so that you can stop laboring, mm-hmm, in order to let your capital support you. That's fundamentally what it is.
It is a validation of Piketty's findings. Yes.
I am trying to get into a place where I have enough stability and enough resources to try to start building a different way. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think that, you know, where we are right now in 2021, I am constantly thinking about climate change. And I'm constantly thinking about how we need to come up with a system of organizing the allocation of resources in this world that is more sustainable and more fair, you know, some kind of ecological, environmental economics of how the world will work. You know, I'm still working on this. This is my new point of research that I'm really focusing in on. I cannot see a world in which that kind of system emerges unless we break that game of labor versus capital apart. Mm. I just can't. In the meantime, do I have a job? Yes. have I made it the best possible job that I can get with my abilities and resources? I'd like to think so. I'm constantly trying to push harder for that. And that's helping me be okay enough now to try and think about, understand, and agitate towards a world in which we make it past 2050, 60, 70.
Right.
The game we're playing now, all these people who are riding around in designer clothes on yachts and sending themselves to Mars, thinking that they are winners, to me, that is the whole world is losing. Fundamentally,
it's a sign of decline.
That is why I want this podcast. I want to be putting out there these questions. You know, I think that understanding these things, engaging with them, and trying to build an abolitionist set of politics, because I do think of my politics regarding capitalism as abolitionist. Mm-hmm. The fact that I have a good job in capitalism doesn't interfere with my anti-capitalism. Because you know what? When I was at the peak of my burnt out brokenness that I got to after too long of living a life of hustling to not meet my basic needs, I was not a powerful person who could push for any kind of change. But right now in my life, I am.
I love it. I mean, and it is like, is the game rigged in so many ways? But to me, key takeaway is like staying at thinking at the level of the game is only going to perpetuate the game. And I appreciate what you're saying, Laura, right? It is about like thinking about what we have instead of this game and how we can set ourselves up and set the communities we're in and the world we're in up to have a different fundamental construction so that we're not back to this game question. I think it's time to wrap. This makes me think about so many other podcast episodes that we did in our last season. So thinking about climate change, thinking about UBI, understanding why billionaires and people with three yachts are problematic. Go back to season one. We talk deep research about that. As always, Laura, it's a pleasure to like go back to my 20s with you and then be in our 40s together in our power.
This has been another episode of Bottom Lines, Top Dollars, a podcast made by queer punks and anti-capitalist finance professionals who, like you, don't trust money.
And are therefore obsessed with understanding it.
Your hosts are the ladies who crunch. That's me, Laura Boo.
And me, Hadassah Damian from Ride Free Fearless Money. Folks, if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe and review us on whatever podcast app you use. And speaking of money, if you are able, throw us a few bucks at patreon.com/bottomlinestopdollars.
Funds from our Patreon will pay for the costs of making and distributing this podcast. And if we grow this project big enough, for the cost of getting help to make this.
Oh, I love help and I love getting to pay for it. But other free things you can do is support us by following us on social media. We're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just search for Bottom Lines Top Dollars or Ladies Who Crunch.
We also have a website where we publish show notes on our blog at ladieswhocrunch.club.
Finally, if you have questions to submit for our end of season listener mail episode or feedback for us, or if you just have your own punk money stories to share, you can email us at bottomlinestopdollars@gmail.com or just find us on one of the social media platforms and message us there.
We'd like to thank our listeners and friends who have contributed to the show, and especially to our researchers and idea sounding boards, Ariel Federo and Handy Levine.
And remember, friends, punk's not dead, but capitalism still sucks. And if what you heard in this podcast sounded familiar, you're not alone. Thanks for listening.